The Offside Rule, We Get It, with Lindsay Hooper, Hayley McQueen and Kate Borsay.
Hello and a very warm welcome to the Offside Rule podcast. Kate Borsay here. I'm stepping in for Lindsay Hooper, who's been delayed. We don't know where she is at the moment, probably in another dimension. But rush home, Linz.
Has she forgotten something to come to our podcast and join us, girls? That could be a form part of one of our topics a bit later on.
It indeed will, Hayley McQueen. Thank you very much. We are going to be talking about forgotten things in football. Hayley McQueen steps back in, arrived from Miami and Manchester, and we'll find out a little bit about that in a second. And Faye Carruthers has stepped in to join the Offside crew today in a little bit more of a role than her usual non-league football. Delighted to have you, Faye.
Thank you very much for having me. I promise I won't talk Luton too much.
Well, she comes in on the back of a draw for Luton, of course, after a win, although they won't make it, will they?
No, we're nowhere near. Absolutely dead and buried ages ago.
Looks like it'll be next season for Luton. Topics today, well, let's give you a quick preview as to what's coming up. As Hayley mentioned, we're going to be talking about forgotten things. Tie a knot in it. This is after referee Mark Clattenburg forgot to bring his cards out for the second half of the game between Liverpool and Reading at the weekend. We're also going to be talking Eurovision. I've asked each of the girls today to pick a European team or a team left in European competition, either in the Champions League or the Europa League, who they think will go on to win the competition. And they've got 60 seconds to prove themselves and the team. Paying the penalty, you know, after Spurs were eliminated from the Europa League last week on penalties, who would you pay to play yours? We've each got 5 nominations for that, and I'm sure we'll have some crossover as well. Not only that, we are going to be talking non-league with Faye Carruthers. I'll be filling you in with the first weekend of the league season in the FAWSL, something that Linz is going to pick up on for the weeks ahead. And we'll also be hearing from Rhiannon Jones as well, who's going to be filling us in on La Liga. So a busy podcast. Oh, and Twitter topic of the week. It could be you who's been given a mention. So stay tuned towards the end of the podcast and we will be revealing all the best manager one-liners or comebacks. And I've had a giggle listening to some of your videos there. First of all, Hayley McQueen, how was Miami? How was Manchester?
Manchester was amazing, all the glitz and glamour. Miami, it rained. It was like the switch of weathers in the...
Where's that tan come from then?
Because I was in Miami for 8 days, I did moan about the 2 days that it rained with thunder and lightning. It did mean I could go and have a little bit of a shop, though, and buy lots of merchandise from the Miami Heat. Go Heat.
Now, let's talk a little bit about the FA Cup. Of course, the semi-finals were at the weekend. One of the games, Millwall-Wigan, was marred by the crowd violence that kicked off there, pretty much Millwall versus Millwall for that. I don't want to focus so much on that. Hayley, you were at the game. How did both teams get on?
I was looking forward to both games, both Saturday and Sunday. I was at them both at Wembley, but Saturday's, it was a bit of a shame because Sunday's game was just so much better. Obviously, two wonderful teams that play in Europe, both in the Premier League, City and Chelsea. And Chelsea didn't quite turn up for the large part of the first half. I don't think Millwall turned up for most of the 90 minutes, actually. Wigan, I think, dominated, but it was a bit of a shame because it was rather timid. I was hoping for a real battle. You know, Millwall desperate to get through. We've seen what happened with the Capital One Cup and Swansea and Bradford, and having a team like Millwall get through to a final to potentially face City or Chelsea would have been a really great story. Equally, for Wigan, if they got through with Manchester City, great for the North West teams and really good, you know, for the love story with Dave Whelan just going on about the love for his club and the passion that he holds. And we all remember what happened to him in a final for Blackburn back in the day, a good few decades before we were even born, leading out his side in the semi-finals and hoping to lead his team in a final. So I think lots of people delighted that it is Wigan that have gone through because of that. But I'd have liked to have seen a bit more of a battle on the pitch with both managers coming out and playing some of the great football that we have seen so far in the FA Cup. And we've seen these two sides getting to the final playing good football, but that kind of wasn't there on show. And unfortunately, all the headlines weren't on Wigan getting through to the final on the 11th of May, but the crowd trouble between the Millwall fans.
Anything to add, Faye?
It is unfortunate that the game was marred by the violence and particularly infighting. And unfortunately, again, it's put the negative focus on Millwall, which is a real shame because actually they've got through to a semi-final. You know, that's fantastic for their club. They've done really well this season. So it's unfortunate that there's been a negative side to it. But to be honest, I'm chuffed with Wigan getting through. Can you imagine if Wigan beat relegation, win the FA Cup final? That would be phenomenal. But even if they get relegated. Luton Town got relegated out of the Football League, but we won the Johnson's Paint Trophy. And it was, would have taken staying in the league without a shadow of a doubt, but we still had that trip to Wembley, that trophy lift and everything. So it did kind of take the edge off a little bit.
Same as Birmingham as well, who won the League Cup final, of course, but got relegated from the Premier League in the same year.
And Middlesbrough back in 97, back in the 90s, when they got through to many cup finals, particularly the FA Cup, and got relegated as well. Let's hope that that doesn't happen this time around, and it turns around and it is a nice ending for Wigan.
OK, let's move on to our first topic after that brief chat about the FA Cup. And just a quick plug for us as well. Don't forget, you can find us, The Offside Rule, at Offside Rule Pod on Twitter. We're available to download every Thursday via SoundCloud and iTunes. And you can, of course, tweet us, get in touch with us, check out the Facebook page, The Offside Rule, at any time.
The female take on football.
Now let's go on to topic one, which I've called Eurovision. Now your task, ladies, is to choose one team either in the final stages of the Europa League or the Champions League. You've got 60 seconds to fight your corner. Tell us about the team and why they will win their respective competition. Your possible picks, of course, in the Europa League: Basel, Chelsea, Fenerbahce and Benfica. In the Champions League: Barcelona, Real Madrid, Borussia Dortmund and Bayern Munich. Who wants to start first? Hayley McQueen, over to you.
Three, two, one, go.
Okay, I'm going to go with Real Madrid in the Champions League to win it at Wembley. Maybe it will be an all El Clasico final, but I'm really pleased that Real Madrid and Barcelona were kept apart in the semi-final. Really exciting. I think Mourinho's going to do it. I think he needs to do it. He wants to do it at Wembley in front of all the British press who'll be waiting for his next move. He wants to end on a bang. He has had lots of problems with the Spanish press and he'll want to basically give them a big kind of fingers up, if I can say that. Madrid, semi-finalists for a record 24th time, the final four for the third successive season. They need the Champions League this season because they haven't done it in La Liga. Home tie as well for the second leg. That is a massive advantage. Can you just imagine the atmosphere in the Bernabeu as well? Dortmund, the underdog, so maybe they have the advantage. I've really loved the football that Borussia Dortmund have given us, but I think they've been slightly lucky. Madrid are going to get to the final and they are going to win it. There you have it. It will be for Mourinho and he will end on a high.
Woo! Perfect.
Almost like you timed it. So, Faye Carruthers, your 60 seconds starts now.
Right, I'm going for Bayern Munich. They've already won the Bundesliga title. They've only lost once this whole season, with their goal difference in the league 70. The domestic league's already wrapped up, so all their efforts can be ploughed into the Champions League instead. They brushed aside Juventus, winning 4-0 on aggregate in the quarterfinals. Total walk in the park for them. They may have had a couple of dodgy results along the way, but they will be fired up for the semis, desperate to go one step better than last season after the disappointment of losing to Chelsea on penalties on their home turf. Slightly embarrassing in last season's final. Jupp Heynckes will want to finish his career on a high as well and win his second Champions League title. And of course, who are they playing in the semi-final? Barcelona. Who's taking over at Bayern in the summer? Pep Guardiola. What better way to impress, or maybe not, your new boss than by knocking out his former team and going on to win the competition? They're ranked as the top two teams in Europe by UEFA, and whoever wins this, Bayern, I think will win the competition. So it's a fifth Champions League title for the German side for me.
Now, you two are going to put me to shame because I don't think I can time mine that well, but I will give it a go nonetheless. OK, Faye Carruthers, on the timer.
Are you ready? Steady. Go.
OK, now Chelsea are the favourites for the Europa League, but I'm going for Portuguese side Benfica. They're top of the Portuguese Primeira Liga, undefeated in at least the last eight games in all competitions. I couldn't search further, but they're doing really well this season. Undefeated in the Europa League from the group stages onwards, they met Bayer Leverkusen, Bordeaux and Newcastle. That first leg against Newcastle, that was a stormer for Benfica. They won that 3-1, really good in that game. Oscar Cardozo up front, Cesar in midfield and Lima too. They've got a good selection of players, all fighting for those goals. They've already gone past the 100 goal mark in all competitions this season. They love to score. In the Champions League, of course, because they're in the Europa League by way of exit from the Champions League, they held Barcelona to a draw at the Nou Camp in December. It wasn't enough to qualify for the group stages. They finished third behind Barca and Celtic. The stats are against any team who exit the Champions League and go on to the Europa League, but I think they're going to win it. They've never won it before. That should be motivation enough, and their coach is is called Jesus.
Oh, just in there.
Just about there. Thank you very much, ladies. Folks at home, you can let us know what you think by getting your opinions in. But yeah, there you go. Bayern Munich for the Champions League for Faye. Hayley has gone for Real Madrid. And in the Europa League, I have gone for Benfica. I think that they should stop holding Champions League finals at Wembley, because whenever there's a Champions League final here, none of the British teams qualify for it. It's almost like a curse for us. Yeah. So we should be encouraging it to be played in other countries.
Hi, I'm Matt Letizia, and you're listening to The Offside Rule, three girls talking about football.
OK, I think we're going to move on to our next topic now, ladies. Topic number two, paying the penalty. Now, Spurs eliminated from the Europa League on penalties. How painful was that? So who would you pay to play yours? Choose your ultimate top five penalty takers from across the leagues. You can use past or present players. I'm going to wing this mic over to Faye Carruthers.
OK, well, I did tell you I was going to bring up the playoff final again, didn't I?
No.
And Luton, but I'm just going to start with someone who I definitely would not choose to take my penalties ever, and that is Jason Walker. I still have nightmares about his penalty chip for Luton in the playoff final at the Etihad two seasons ago. Why on earth would you chip a crucial penalty? You are not Thierry Henry. Which leads me on to Mr. Henry himself. He's number one for me because of those cheeky chips, a couple of them, most notably against Newcastle in 03-04. Always cool as a cucumber and exactly what you would want from your spot kicker, apart from the one he planned with Robert Pirès for Arsenal against Man City, which was a little bit embarrassing. Matt Letizia, though, of course, you know, I'm sure one of you girls will have picked Letizia out as well. He's only missed one penalty kick in his whole career. This is what he says about spot kicks. I always went for the corners, wasn't brave enough to hit it straight down the middle. It worked for him. Graham Alexander is another one, ex-Luton, of course, Scunny Preston and Burnley, now Fleetwood manager. 77 of his career goals came from the spot. His success rate was 90%. His advice was to think of the goalkeeper being completely irrelevant, and then he avoided getting into mind games with them. So he used to practice without a keeper. One other that I picked out, bit left field, but this guy, and I really apologise, anyone who's well up on their Brazilian football if I mispronounce this, but Roger Rogério Ceni, 40-year-old Brazilian goalkeeper, plays for Sao Paulo, and he's the world record holder of goals scored by a goalkeeper. He's scored 110, and 51 of them have been from the penalty spot. So he is my chief penalty taker.
Excellent. Despite slightly extending the parameters of the topic, Faye, let's pass this over to Hayley McQueen.
OK, it's quite funny when you think about this topic, because it sprung to mind who I wouldn't have taking my penalties. And actually, there are some big names out there who have missed penalties this season. And it's the lesser known players who have better records. I don't quite know how that works, but you've got players like Hernandez, Rooney, Cisse, Gerrard, Dzeko, who have all missed penalties this season. The JWs don't do very well, do they? You mentioned Jason Walker. I've got Jonathan Walters. Oh. He missed two this season. Yeah, he's had a mare of a season. It was unfortunate, yeah. Rooney's actually only scored 18 from 26 for United, so he's missed eight there. A remarkable conversion rate of just 69%. Hmm. Van Persie netted 19 out of 24 in his career, but 19 from 24 might sound okay, but it's just not good enough if you're RVP. Right, let's go with a new Matt Letizia. You mentioned you would bring him back, although he is apparently playing football at the moment for Guernsey FC, is that right?
Yeah, he is.
But I have gone Southampton. They seem to have a very, very good sort of history of scoring penalties and creating wonderful penalty scorers. Ricky Lambert, he's got the best record in the league this season, as I mentioned, better than RVP and Rooney as well. So maybe he was looking to a Matt Letizia and thinking, yes, I want to be the new Matt Letiz, who, as you mentioned, failed to score only one penalty, I can't believe that, from 49 during his 16 seasons down there. Lambert scored that penalty against Aston Villa, slightly controversial, but he did score it. Hugely important game as well, of course, in the terms of relegation battle and where the two sides stood at the time. He also scored again against Aston Villa a little earlier in the season, and in the draw against Fulham as well, another penalty there. Another guy who I've had in my fantasy football since the beginning of the season, Leighton Baines, 100% record as a penalty taker. He's just very cool. He looks like he's about to step on stage with a guitar, and he kind of does that whole same thing of just smoothly walking up to the penalties, just sauntering And he's just too cool for school. So his appearance, his demeanour, everything about him is just up there perfectly to take a penalty. Frank Lampard, everyone wants a Frank Lampard in their side. When it comes down to England, who've actually been knocked out of 6 of the last 10 tournaments via penalties, they are going to need to practice their penalties, and they need somebody like Frank Lampard. He's converted 9 successful spot kicks, making him England's best penalty taker in history ever. So let's hope he's there in Rio and can help England get through and not have to face a penalty shootout. But if he does, that all the boys will be looking to him for some tips. Any one of the Bradford City side will do for me, to be honest. I've got to give them a mention. Getting to the cup final, of course, against Swansea. The win over Arsenal. My goodness, in the quarterfinals, the competition. Their 9th consecutive penalty success. That is an English record. I will have any of those boys stepping up to take a penalty. Couldn't pick between one of them because that would just be cruel. And finally, these are players that are supposed to be playing in England right now. Is that right? Or Britain, Kate?
Yeah.
I did pick Ronaldo because I couldn't not have Ronaldo. Oh. And he scored some great penalties whilst playing in England. He has missed a few penalties as well. In fact, famous Champions League ones to boot. But he has learnt from that. He now has a 95% conversion rate. He missed it in the Champions League final. I'm not going to go on too much about that. He remains calm, calculated from a dead ball situation. He is your man. He's just too cool for school. And I can't see him missing a penalty ever again. I'm going to stick with him. Not only do I love Real Madrid, I love Ronaldo.
Well, we've of course got some duplicates here. So I'm just going to mop up the rest of them. You mentioned Bradford City in that victory over Arsenal in the quarterfinal of this season's Capital One Cup. Well, about a year earlier, 27 penalties were scored in succession in a Johnston's Paint Trophy meeting between Leighton Orient and Dagenham and Redbridge. Phenomenal.
27.
Insane. Let's go players, though. And Hayley mentioned Bradford and the English club record. Well, talking about 9 in succession, that's what Steven Gerrard did at one point in his career. He's one of my penalty taker. Now, the reason why I've gone for Stevie G, not just because I'm a huge fan of him, is because he's Mr. Reliable. He's Mr. Cool and Calm under pressure. In fact, I think he adds a touch of pizzazz, a touch of, I don't know what, a touch of Stevie G when he takes a penalty. You can always pretty much rely on him in a tense situation to get that goal. You talked about Matt Le Tissier loving to hit the corner of the goal. Gerrard does too, of course, although he likes to keep the goalkeepers guessing by mixing it up a bit, as you do. I think he's one of the best penalty takers in the modern game. He's taken 39 penalties for Liverpool. He scored 31 of those. That included a run of 19 penalties scored from April 2007 to the beginning of November 2010. In that period, he took 21. He scored 19 of them. That's pretty phenomenal. He scored 5 and missed 1 this season. I did look at Leighton Baines as well, of course. When I looked at his stats, he's only missed 1 in all competitions in the last 3 seasons for Everton. Phenomenal record there for him. Gary McAllister, this is a bit of an old school one, but I'm going to mention GMAC all the same. He might have messed up with that penalty miss for Scotland against England back in the day, but he was excellent at those dead ball situations, including penalties. King of the side foot, he was excellent when he went up to take them. I couldn't find any official stats for Gary McAllister, but the one that I found, the sketchy one that I found, is the record that says he went up to take 77 penalties and scored 72 of them. I did find stats for his time at Liverpool where he took 6 and scored 5 of those. Frank Lampard, a bit like you, Hayley, I went for him. As of January, he had taken 52 and scored 46, and he's scored another one since then. That's around 95% on his stats. Ricky Lambert, I also went for as well. 31 goals from 31 attempts. That probably makes him the best in the league so far.
Hi, I'm Jeff Stelling, and you're listening to The Offside Rule. 3 women talking about football. I'm used to listening to 4 old women talking about football on Saturday afternoons, so I'll definitely prefer this.
Now, this is usually the time, Faye, when we throw over to you for your excellent weekly non-league roundup, but you've joined us here in the studio today. I know you want to wait for the results to come in right before we publish the podcast, so I'm going to get you to throw over to yourself.
This is me with my non-league roundup.
The non-league roundup.
Very strange. Anyway, I am recording this after Tuesday the 16th's evening results, and there's been a change at the top of the Blue Square Bet Premier table again. Mansfield have reclaimed their automatic top spot after beating Hereford 2-1. Kidderminster now 2 points behind them. Newport definitely can't go up automatically now. They had to come from behind twice to cement their playoff spot, drawing 2-2 with Luton at Kenilworth Road, so they finished third. Ebbsfleet were relegated last Saturday. They played out a 1-1 draw with Tamworth, a draw that means they're still not safe. Stockport and Gateshead still have a chance of survival, though, after they drew 1-1. The Tynesiders would have secured it, but Stockport equalised at the death, so their safety will be decided on the final game of the season on Saturday. Grimsby beat Woking 1-0 and will definitely be in the playoffs. Wrexham held to a 1-1 draw with Braintree, but they still finish in the top five as well. Dartford move into seventh with a 3-2 win over 10-man Forest Green. So this is how it stands. As I record this, Luton and Ebbsfleet are going to be playing on Thursday, but that game actually more for pride really than any kind of significance for both teams. Saturday is the final day of the season though. One more win for Mansfield and they are crowned champions and will go back to the Football League after spending 5 years in the conference. If they lose though and Kidderminster win, then it's the Harriers who move up into League Two. The other three playoff places, as I said, are decided already, although not who plays who of course yet. Newport, Wrexham and Grimsby making up the top five, all vying for promotion. Down at the bottom though, Barrow, Ebbsfleet and AFC Telford have already been relegated. Stockport lie in that fourth relegation spot, but a win against Kidderminster, eek, and results elsewhere going their way could mean that they survive. Lincoln, Gateshead and Tamworth are the sides who could get dragged down instead. So it's going to be a fascinating day on Saturday. I will bring you the up and the down news next week, along with all the details of the playoff semi-finals.
Thank you very much, Faye Carruthers, for that non-league roundup.
You're welcome.
We're also going to start to look at the FAWSL, of course. It was the start of the league season this weekend. Before we go to that, I just wanted to talk a little bit of Champions League. Arsenal, of course, are in the semi-finals of the Women's Champions League. They face a bit of an uphill battle, ladies. Their semi-final first leg was a 2-0 defeat to German team Wolfsburg. So they've got a lot of work to do in the second leg. They did press for long spells at Boreham Wood, but they were stung by goals from Wolfsburg. German football, we know that that's incredibly strong, but we just hope Arsenal have got enough in them to get something back in the second leg, because we really want to see them in that final at Chelsea, of course, at the end of May.
I was just going to mention, actually, because we had Steve McLaren in the studio the other day when I was at Sports News, and I was chatting to him just off camera. We were chatting about what Wolfsburg is like. We got onto the subject of women's football whilst we were waiting for the Champions League draw, and he just said, the standard of women's football, especially out in Germany, there are so many teenage girls playing it. And he'd said he'd like to see a lot more females playing football like the Germans do. And he said, whilst he does think women's game over here is very strong and that the FA are trying to change things with the way that women's football is viewed and the way that the sort of money is put into coaching and the future of the women's game, because the leagues over here are so strong and the men's game is so strong, the women's football is never going to match that. And I was surprised at sort of his depth and knowledge of the women's game, particularly of this Wolfsburg side. I thought he might know nothing about.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? That's what they're going to come up against, because I would expect Lyon to take the other berth in the final. They just look so athletically strong and powerful, and you can really notice it when you see them play against opposition from other countries. Let's look at the FAWSL. It was the first weekend of the league season. A couple of fixtures to talk about. Now, actually, Lindsay went to go and see this one, so it's a shame that she's not here today. But Birmingham City, last year's runners-up in the FAWSL, took on Chelsea. It finished a 1-1 draw, but what it did provide was absolutely brilliant long-range strike from Rachel Williams. Fantastic goal. Go and have a look at that, folks, if you haven't already. The other game that took place was Liverpool Ladies. Very much a rejuvenated, revamped Liverpool Ladies side. They finished bottom of the FAWSL the last two seasons, and they've had a change of manager and a dramatic change of squad for this season. Now, that finished 1-0 to Liverpool as they played Lincoln Ladies, the Lady Imps. Farrah Williams, very, very strong in that game. The goal was scored by Natasha Dowie. And I think it was her. I was looking at some highlights briefly. I think it was her who nearly scored an excellent one towards the end of the game. It was a real thumper of a strike, but it sadly missed. Can they make a dent in Arsenal's fantastic run of success in women's football in this country? Who knows? We will keep you updated on the FAWSL on a weekly basis. Lindsay Hooper will be taking you through that, and we'll try and grab interviews where we can for you. OK, well, that leads us on to topic three, tie a knot in it. Now, there's been plenty of talk about referees from the weekend's fixtures, hasn't there? But we're going to take a look at referees, but in a different way, because tie a knot in it, don't forget. You know, it's said that if you don't want to forget something, you should tie a knot in a handkerchief. I think it's only my dad who uses a handkerchief these days. My mum diligently irons them every week with his little initials in the corner in case he forgets whose hanky he's got. Tying a knot in a handkerchief, a good way of not forgetting. And they also say that elephants don't forget as well. The subject of our third topic is referee Mark Clattenburg, who forgot to bring his cards out for the second half of Reading's 0-0 draw with Liverpool. He realised after trying to book Danny Guthrie and had to ask the fourth official for a spare. So, ladies, I'd like you to give me up to three other examples of things that have been forgotten in football. Faye, I'm going to start with you.
I'm sure there are plenty of people who can sympathise with me on this one, but I've forgotten my gloves plenty of times, which is problematic when watching football in winter with horizontal sleet. I'm sure other people have done that as well. Oh, and I also forgot my handbag at Elland Road once. I was just trying to get on the bus to take me away from the ground when I realised I had to sprint round the whole stadium back to where I was sitting, where amazingly it was still there waiting for me. How nice.
Wow.
Nice Luton and Leeds fans. You don't hear that often. Quotes from former Chelsea manager Carlo Ancelotti is my second one. Chelsea beaten 1-0 by Manchester City at the start of the 2010-11 season. And Ancelotti blamed referee Andre Mariner for letting City off for dangerous tackles. And he said, when that happens, he has to whistle. I can't do a Carlo Ancelotti accent, by the way, so I'm not even going to try. He couldn't whistle because he'd left his whistle at home. I don't think he did, Carlo.
No,
that's just sour grapes. Mm. But this one's my favourite. Zinedine Zidane forgot his head in a football match, metaphorically, because unfortunately he did actually bring it with him and then used it to butt Marco Materazzi in the 2006 World Cup final, which that iconic moment is, of course, now depicted in bronze in a sculpture outside the Pompidou Centre in Paris.
Ooh. I have another refereeing one as well. We all remember this game, very controversial. It was when there was an Englishman involved in the Croatia-Australia game, and it was Graham Poll. He had a terrible game out in Germany, didn't he? Unfortunately. Created World Cup history by booking one player, Josip Simunic, three times. He gave him his second yellow card on 90 minutes and would have been off. Forgot he'd already written his name in the book, what have you. Showed him a red one 3 minutes after the final whistle after booking him again for dissent. And this was, of course, remember the game when I think Tim Cahill was running up and down, practically celebrating as the goal went in as the final whistle blew. And then it wasn't allowed. What about when Jose Mourinho took over at Real Madrid, absolutely making sure the players knew who was boss? Five first-team players failed to turn up for the bus on time, and they just left without them. These five players apparently were all stuck in traffic. There were traffic problems. A lot of them live in the same kind of area in the barrios of Madrid and had been travelling. And at 8:45, they were supposed to be meeting at the Bernabeu before heading off to their pre-match hotel. But Ronaldo, Kaká, Contrao, Pepe and Alvaro Arbeloa were all absent, stuck in traffic. The good thing was, though, they abandoned their cars, parked them up, and Arbeloa took his four other teammates, and they all met up at the hotel. But they were only a few minutes late, apparently, as they started to trickle in. But, you know, Mourinho was absolutely, you were supposed to be here then. That is it. You have to account for traffic. How you can account for traffic, I do not know. What about Neil Lennon? He has a bit of an issue with Efe Ambrose. He was dropped in the Champions League defeat to Juventus, not because he missed the team bus. He wasn't very good in the game previously, of course, and in that first leg as well. He's a defender who hadn't defended very well. And not only that, he was trying to make up for things. You'd think he'd be on his best behaviour, but no, he missed the bus. He also nearly missed the team's flight to Barcelona as well for forgetting his passport. Somebody from the club had to run around, go and find his passport, and he only just managed to get on the flight. So there you have it. Those are my three.
Quick cheeky one for you. Gareth Bale and Luis Suarez. Perhaps they've forgotten what it's like to play with 2 feet and remain upright on a football pitch as opposed to being on the floor. I wish Torres would forget to take his face mask off, because since he's had that beauty on, with a little number 9 on it as well, it looks great. Since he's had that beauty on, he has scored 3 times. And for Fernando Torres, that is brilliant. My third one. Do you remember when Harry Redknapp turned up at the wrong training ground? Now, I I can't quite remember whether he'd just joined Portsmouth or rejoined Southampton after being at Portsmouth, but he famously drove to the wrong training ground on his first day at work. There you go.
John Steele did that as well when he left Dagenham and Redbridge. He went to turn up on his first day at Luton and said he left his home and started driving towards Dagenham and Redbridge.
John, Harry, you should have tied a knot in it, shouldn't you?
Hi, I'm Eddie Jenkins from TalkSport.
Yeah, and I'm Paul Hawksby from TalkSport.
And you're listening to the Offside Rule podcast.
Let's move on to our Twitter topic of the week. Now, this was inspired by a tweet from journalist Oliver Kay about Roberto Mancini's reply for not seeing Aguero's challenge. And our lovely Harriet, who's organised Twitter topic of the week for us this week, has put challenge-assault on my bit of paper, which might be quite a strong way of putting it. But yeah, of course, Sergio Aguero went in for that two-footed tackle, didn't he, on David Luiz, and wasn't punished appropriately for it. And Mancini told the reporter, "I didn't see it." And the reporter said, "It was right in front of you." Mancini replied, "I need glasses." So we asked you for the best comebacks or witty one-liners, quotes or rants from managers. Let's start with Fergie, and these are your responses. Thank you so much for sending these in to us. You've been tweeting us at Offside Rule Pod. Talking of Fergie, the Black Prince at Beyond Arsenal is his Twitter name. Sir Alex Ferguson, Cole should be scoring from those distances, but I'm not going to single him out. Very nice. Thank you very much. Let's move on to Gordon Strachan, the subject of many of our tweets this week. Keith Jackson, one of our colleagues here at Sky Sports, tweeted us, and the reporter said, "Any changes, Gordon?" And Gordon Strachan said, "Nah, still short, ginger, big nose." This one has been sent in by three of you, Mark McCardle, Del Strain comedian, and the Black Prince again. Reporter, "Gordon, could I have a quick word?" Gordon Strachan responds, "Aye, velocity." Ian Holloway, now he's come up with some absolute blinders, and we'll try and put some of these up on our Facebook page. Thanks to Moz, at Moz_CEC, who's sent us a whole ream of them that were listed on BBC Sport. One of the best ones that I like was Holloway. He was asked for his reaction after QPR beat Cardiff, and he said, "I couldn't be more chuffed if I were a badger at the start of the mating season." Thanks, Ollie, for that one. Ron Atkinson, this is a great one. He says, "I never comment on referees, and I'm not going to break the habit of a lifetime for that prat." Thank you very much, Ron, for that one. Kate Riley, who works with us here at Sky Sports now, thanks very much for this one. Kate, "Journo to Mick McCarthy after a good run at Ipswich. Are you magic, Mick?" To which Mick responded, "If I was, I'd make you disappear." And here's one from Richard Buxton. Not really a one-liner per se, but Jose Mourinho delivers a decent punchline here. It was when Real Madrid are taking on CSKA Moscow in the Champions League. And he has a real pop at the reporters saying, "Look, not one of you's asked me about CSKA's tactics and not one of you's asked me for my team tomorrow." So one of the journalists pops up and says, "OK then, Jose, what's your lineup for tomorrow?" And he says, "No, it's too late. I'm sorry. I'm off," and walks out of pretends to walk out of the press conference. Thanks very much for sending those in, folks. We've really enjoyed them this week.
Twitter topic of the week.
We're going to finish up with our foreign roundup of the week, and it's a very warm welcome to Rhiannon Jones, who fills us in. It's an exciting time at the moment, of course, in La Liga. Over to you, Rhiannon.
Hi, girls. Here's this week's roundup of La Liga, starting with Real Madrid's 3-0 win over Athletic Bilbao. It was the Whites' final game at San Mamés before the Basques moved to another stadium at the end of the season. Cristiano Ronaldo opened the scoring with a free kick in the second minute of the game. His stunning header doubled the visitors' lead before he set up Gonzalo Higuain for the third. The Portuguese forwards now on 31 league goals so far this season, 196 with Real Madrid. The result will no doubt please Jose Mourinho ahead of Wednesday's Champions League semi-final tie. He travelled to Germany on Saturday to watch next opponents Borussia Dortmund in action in the Bundesliga. Malaga bounced back from their dramatic Champions League exit with a 1-0 victory over Osasuna, while 3 points shy of a Champions League spot in La Liga are Real Betis. A thrilling derby saw them fight back from 3 goals down to salvage a 3-3 draw against 10-man Sevilla. And Real Sociedad further solidified their claim for the fourth Champions League spot with a comfortable 2-0 win against Rayo Vallecano. Atletico Madrid smashed Granada 5-0 at the Vicente Calderón to stay 11 points clear of Real Sociedad. League leaders Barcelona beat Zaragoza 3-0 without Lionel Messi, who continues to struggle with a hamstring injury. While Deportivo's escape from the brink of relegation continued with a 4-0 win over Levante with goals from all four attacking players. They're provisionally outside the bottom three for the first time since November. That's it for now from me here in Madrid. Adios, girls.
That's it for us for this week, folks. Thanks very much for letting me hijack the main hosting position. I hope I've been all right. And thank you very much for Faye for stepping in. She's going to be producing the podcast this week as well. So we might as well call you Mademoiselle Offside Rule Podcast, Faye.
Thank you very much.
And Hayley McQueen as well, who has arrived fresh back from her holidays, looking glowing. That's it from us then, folks. Remember, you can listen to us on SoundCloud, on iTunes. There's a link to the podcast on our Twitter account as well, at Offside Rule Pod. Also, you can check out our Facebook page and leave any comments there that you like. And we'll get a few of these Twitter Topic of the Week YouTube clips up as well on there. The Facebook page is called The Offside Rule. Thanks very much, folks. We'll see you next week with hopefully everyone intact.
The Offside Rule. We get it. With Lindsay Hooper, Hayley McQueen and Cade Borsay.